Hey, all right. Hey, good morning, everybody. And we hope you guys had a very great Christmas. I know, it's such a busy time for, it's supposed to be great with family and everything. When you get done with it, you kind of just sit down, or probably the better word is you just kind of collapse. And, you look around and go, that was great, but wow. Now's a great time for recovery between Christmas and New Year's. I call that my recovery time, my time to ponder, my time to think, my time to plan is during these few days where you get a chance to relax a little bit as you get ready to get going in the new year. So we hope, Melinda and I hope all of you had just a spectacular and wonderful Christmas. I know we did with our family. It's all about family and friends, and so that was really great. And now it's time to look into the new year. And so we're going to do our goal setting this morning. But before we do a goal setting training, Malin, we just want to turn the time over to you for a second to get your thoughts, and then we'll turn it over to Alan.
Well, I won't take a lot of time right now because we're going to take so much time later. But we do hope you're having a wonderful time. And as Steve said, this is a great, great time to kind of dust off the cobwebs and really set your mindset for the coming year. And I know everybody at the office has been doing that, lots of cleaning house and getting things ready to go. So, Alan, what's going on?
Thanks, Milan. It's an exciting time of the year, and I'll be quick with the announcements because I'm really excited to you guys' goal setting presentation too. But we're wrapping up the month. It was so nice to have Will call yesterday and have some of our leaders in there with us and orders taking place and toward end of month business happening. But just a reminder that today is the 30th, tomorrow's the 31st, and of course, ordering online is available right up until midnight Mountain Time on the 31st. Our support will have email support available tomorrow, December 31st, from 9 a.m. until noon Mountain Time. So if you need to have some interaction with the support staff, they'll be manning that for those 3 hours in the morning, 9 to 12 Mountain Time. But you can order online anytime. And speaking of ordering online, boy, we've got a great BOGO going. Buy one, renew, get one free. Oh my gosh. That is a really cool promo, and that is a really amazing product. So if you haven't taken advantage of that, do it and let your downline know, let your customers know, let your team know, and that's just a great opportunity. And just a reminder, I say this every week, but just a reminder is, check out The Voice that comes out every Thursday. Kay Marie does a fantastic job with both content and just making it look like a fantastic piece of communication to look at. It's just a lot of fun. She's got some great graphics in there wishing us all Happy New Year 2018 and some great content in there too. Great articles, relevant things every week in Trend Your Limitless. In that one, she focuses on how education is so important in improving our lives, and all of our products are scientifically based. And just as you educate yourselves about what's important for your body and what's amazing about our products, every time I take a fact sheet out and I study one of our products, I'm like, wow, this is an amazing product. Look what these ingredients do. Look at these studies. And we've got the exact amounts from the same source that are relevant, so we know that the results in those studies apply to us as we use the product. And I say that frequently too, but we are so fortunate to have these amazing limitless products. And so review The Voice, great information there just to remind us about some of those things that are so core about Limitless. In the Momentum Mindset section, Kay Marie did a great article about goal setting, and of course I'm not going to focus any on that because Steve and Malin are going to do a great job teaching us today about goal setting, but there's some great content there too. As we look ahead to next week, of course, Monday is New Year's Day, and so we will be closed. The office won't be open, but we'll be there bright and early Tuesday picking up, excited to join, to get the new year started off right and be supporting you guys. And I am looking forward to an amazing 2018, and I know everyone on this call is too. I'm really excited thinking about where the future is going to take us. Another note that was also mentioned in The Voice is a note about our concern as a company for the environment. And I'll just quickly read this. You may notice that your next Thrive HGH bottle arrives without a box. At Limitless, we are taking our concern for the environment to a new level and are continuing to transition to boxless on our bottled supplements. Additionally, other bottled products will be shipping without a box in the near future. So just, you know, when you see that Thrive bottle come without a box, that's by design. You know, we recognize that once you take it out of the box is gone. And so let's not add to the challenges with the environment. Let's be supportive. And that's our approach of taking care of nature. All right. And, you know, a reminder too, looking at the calendar of our fly-in coming up. Wow, we're just a few weeks away. I know we're going to be busy doing Tuesday is continuing our fly-in preparations. That is going to be so exciting as we continue to put that together for January 19th and 20th. Looking forward to that, and mark your calendars. You know, we've got a registration link in The Voice, and no fee, I believe, there. We just want to know who's coming so that we can plan and be ready. And let's see, you know, I think that about covers it. We'll also, of course, have a You Even Better broadcast beginning on Tuesday next week, and that will feature Erica Shields. She's a great ambassador for us. We always appreciate being able to view her broadcast and the information she has to share about our great products. All right, Steve and Melinda, I'll turn it back to you guys.
All right. Thank you, Alan. And as we are now on our very last Saturday of 2017, and we get to send that year off into the historic annals, if you will, and now we get to look forward to 2018. And Steve and I always enjoy doing this last Saturday call as we get prepared to do our goal setting and want to share with you some of our thoughts on that. So I'm going to turn it back over to Steve, and let's get rolling, honey.
All right. Well, you know, first of all, when you think about goal setting, there's no way in the next 20 minutes or so we're going to be able to cover everything that we want to cover on goal setting. So this is a piece of goal setting, but it's a piece to get you started in your goal setting from our perspective. And then on the absolute specifics, we're going to break them down over the next few weeks in training as you guys get on these national calls. So, but we wanted to start this morning with a couple of thoughts. And if you guys have any index cards, I know Sandy's going to laugh when she hears this because, you know, I always like to consider myself old school because I am old school, I guess. But I would love for you guys to get a couple of index cards. You don't have to get them right this second. If you have them, great. But if you don't, you can write them later. But what's the purpose of getting a couple of index cards? Because it's so easy to take a piece of scotch tape and take that index card and stick it on a mirror or something wherever you look every single morning or on a fridge or, you know, wherever you want to kind of remind yourself of goals, because part of goal setting is visualization. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about something I call the 3 D's this morning, and we'll get to it in just a second. But as Stephen R. Covey always said, whenever your plate's clean, so to speak, and I want you to try to envision 2018 is a brand new year. It is a clean slate, guys. Whatever happened in 2017 that wasn't good, just find a big garbage can and visualize you're dumping all of those things that didn't work the way you want into that garbage can for 2017. And in 2018, you got a completely clean desk, okay, and you can start fresh. And there's nothing better than when you're able to start over or start fresh and take what you learned previously from 2017 that worked for you and be able to apply it to 2018. So I always like to begin with Stephen R. Covey, where he says, begin with the end in mind. If you want to know where you're going in 2018, then begin with the end in mind. And so you have to simply say to yourself, and let's keep this simple, okay? Let's not keep this complicated. Let's start with keeping it simple. What is it you want to accomplish in 2018? If you have a pad in front of you, take a few minutes and just write down in a quiet moment. For me, mornings are wonderful. Early mornings before people start calling or before you get texts or before you have to do all these things that get your day going. And there's some quiet time. And I have an hour every morning where it's just quiet time. And so take that quiet time and write down what it is that in your mind you want to accomplish in 2018, what you think will make a better year in 2018. I know Malin and I, we have some really, really specific goals that we have set for Limitless as a company. So helping you guys be able to hit whatever goals that you're going to set for yourself in 2018 is a great thing for all of us as part of the Limitless family, because if we help you guys accomplish and hit your goals, then we as a company will hit our goals. And that's through things like incentives and financial incentives and trip incentives and, you know, different things that we want to have fun in 2018. And by hitting them, we grow as a company and you grow as an individual. So I know Malin's got some thoughts on this here in a few minutes. So I just wanted to tell you that we're behind you all the way in whatever those goals are. So let's talk about the 3Ds for a second. And I would love for you to get 3 index cards and write in big, huge letters on these 3x5 index cards. The first one, I would love you to write down, define it. Okay, that's the first thing, the first D, define it. Stick it on an index card, stick it on the mirror. For me, it's the mirror in my bathroom, you know, if you want to hit a goal. So number one is define it. Number two is declare it. And number three is devote to do it. Let me give you those three again. Number one is define it. Number two is declare it. And number three is devote to do it. You know, without realizing it, probably in a real sense, even as a young person growing up, I was a goal setter. I had huge goals of things that I wanted to accomplish in my life. Always have, and I believe I always will. And I think back, for me, I think back to even when I was coming through high school, and in my senior year of high school, you know, for a lot of us that had the good fortune of being athletic, even in high school, you know, I was a wide receiver on the football team, and I was only 145 pounds. That's probably why they chose me to be a wide receiver, because I tended to be able to run fast because I was so light. And I could, you know, when you see a big, huge player come in to tackle you, you run even faster. So I was a wide receiver on the football team. I was on the soccer team. I was an outside right in the soccer team, and I was on the cross country team. And, you know, and was in the chess club and all those things. So very, very active in all the extracurricular activities. And so you learn sometimes that you want to accomplish certain goals. And in high school, when I was on the cross country team, I remember distinctly saying, hey, it's my senior year and I want to be able to break a 5-minute mile running. Now, 5-minute mile, yeah, that may not sound like something great, but for a high school kid to break a 5-minute mile, you know, that was a dream, that was a goal, and that was something that I had in my brain that I could accomplish. Now, I think I've done a couple of calls on goal setting in the past where we talked about marathons, and, you know, what's amazing to me, what blows my mind, is if you ever watch the Olympic marathon, and, you know, you see these runners running 26 miles. And, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Alan running a marathon. And, you know, at what point do most people quit a marathon race? And, you know, where their heads are at and where's the wall that people hit and everything. But in a 26-mile marathon race in the Olympics, the leaders, all the leaders, every single mile that they run during that 26 miles, they break a 5-minute mile. As a matter of fact, if you figure it out, you know, the person who holds the record, which is 10 years old, by the way, right now for the marathon run. And Alan probably knows this, but, you know, the record is 2 hours and 3 minutes in a marathon run. That means every mile was at least a 4:42, 4:43 mile, running every single mile. I mean, you know, that person's clicking along pretty dang fast. But I figured I could at least run 1 mile. And I told you when I came to college in my freshman year, many of you know my good friend Wes Ingram. And, you know, Wes said, hey, anybody can break a 5 minute mile. And I said, Wes, you don't understand how tough it is. And he was convinced that he could do it if we gave him 2 weeks training. So we gave him 2 weeks training. He got up. He did his exercises. He ran in the morning. He was absolutely convinced. We went down to the George Albert Smith Fieldhouse. And I remember on that first lap that he did, he was just trucking. And he did it in, I think it was like 67 seconds or something, that first lap around the track. And the second lap around the track, right in front of myself and my roommates, because we all had this milkshake bet going on this, he Ralphed all over the track just because it was such a hard thing. And he put everything into his effort to run as fast as he could because he knew he had to run 4 laps. But he made it through the second lap and boom, right in front of us. He got sick on the track. So it's important that when you understand goal setting that you set some goals to pace yourself, some goals that are realistic. We talked about having realistic goals, and we talked about having stretch goals during one of our trainings. We're going to talk about that again. But it's important that you start to plan what you're going to do. You need to plan it. You need to visualize it. And you need to see the stages or the yard markers that you hit in your goals as you're going. So we're gonna talk about those things as well. But it's important to have those index cards, because when you walk into wherever you're looking in the morning, first thing, and you remind yourself that you're going to define what that goal is and that you're going to declare it to the world, or you're going to declare it to a buddy. You know, a lot of people have buddy systems here. I know that, you know, Pam and Terry, I know, you know, Liz, I know Cindy. Cindy sent me her list of people she's contacting for the new year, and it looks like Santa's wish list. It just goes on and on and on. So I know that she's already honing her list as to what to do, but it's important that, you know, in order to plan it, you got to be able to visualize it, and you got to see the stages or the yard markers. The second one, so take some time and define what it is you want to accomplish. One of those things that I would like you to do is to define how much money you would like to make on a monthly basis. I have so many people tell me all the time, Steve, it's not about the money. Yeah, no, we understand it's not just about the money. We understand that it's about the products and their life-changing and everything. But I want everyone here to have a financial goal as to what they would realistically, both, you know, what they'd like to hit and what a stretch goal would be for them. I would like for you guys to take the time to figure out what you would like to make on a monthly basis. Now, here's the yard marker from Limitless's standpoint. We always talk about this. And, you know, there's no guarantee of income in any company. But in our company, we always like to say, on an average, we know that you will generally make between 8 and 12% of whatever your organizational volume is. So we always like to use 10%. So, for example, if you want to make $1,000 a month, then you know that in your organization, your total organization, you have to have $10,000 of volume that goes through there on a monthly basis. If you want to make $10,000 a month, that means you have to have $100,000 of volume or anything in between. You know, if you want to make $2,500, it's just an easy yardstick to say, okay, I know how much volume I need to have in my organization. And we're going to talk about specifics on what you need to do in order to get volume. And but I want you to take one of those index cards and write down on that index card a monthly goal of what you would like to make income-wise. And that's going to go up on the mirror. There's your financial monthly goal, not what you would wish to have or anything, what you realistically think you can achieve, or that would be a goal that you would like to hit in 2018. So stick that on your mirror and just keep in mind that, hey, if I'm going to do this, I need to make sure that if 10%, I got to have that kind of group volume. So there's the first thing. Then on those cards, you're going to write, you know, define it, because you're going to be thinking in this week what those goals are. So you're going to define it clearly, you know, what you want to hit. I'm not talking about what your why is here necessarily. I mean, you know, there's different reasons. You can specifically go there if you want as part of your goal setting, but you're going to define what you want to do, and you're going to put define it on one of those index cards, and you're going to put declare it on one of those index cards, and you're going to put devote to do it on one of those cards, and you're going to stick those three cards next to that goal, and you're going to see them every single day when you go into something like that. Let's talk about declare it for a second. We'll come back and talk about different things during different trainings. But declare it. There's a great movie out right now called The Darkest Hour. It's a great movie. It's the story about Winston Churchill. And what he had to go through as the young prime minister in Europe. And, you know, since, you know, we didn't live during the Second World War, or a lot of us didn't live during the Second World War, you know, it's interesting to go back and read what was taking place in Europe. And if you go back and you watch what Hitler did in Europe when he marched into Poland and Czechoslovakia, and he just overran Western Europe completely, and he took it all in Western Europe, and the only place he didn't attack right then was Russia, and that seemed like a crazy concept, but the rest of Europe he basically overran. And I was reading in preparation for this movie, The Darkest Hour, in 1937, Britain was at a low ebb. There was Neville Chamberlain, who was sent to Germany to look and see if they could do any kind of prospects with Adolf Hitler in order to save Britain from what was happening in Europe, because it seemed like, hey, they were just going to go on their way. When Neville Chamberlain came back from Munich, Germany, he gave a talk in the House of Commons, and I'm going to quote from that. He said, "We have sustained a total and unmitigated defeat." They felt like Britain had absolutely no chance. Remember, America had not entered the war. Pearl Harbor didn't happen in 1941. And so here's a young Winston Churchill. He becomes the prime minister. And on the day he became prime minister, on the very day Winston Churchill became prime minister, that's when Hitler invaded the rest of Western Europe, completely sweeping it before, and then Neville Chamberlain comes in and says to the House of Commons, we have sustained a total and unmitigated defeat. And you remember, if those of you have seen the movie Dunkirk, you know, all the British soldiers were stuck in Dunkirk, and it looked like 300,000-400,000 of them were going to be wiped out. And so here, it's into this situation that Winston Churchill came. And you know, he thought to himself, what do I say to this tiny nation that's the only nation left as Hitler's coming? And so he stood up before the House of Commons, and he made this, it was a very interesting statement. He stood up, as only probably Winston Churchill could do, and in front of his cabinet and House of Commons, he simply made this famous statement. He said, "We shall go and we shall fight it out. We shall go and we shall fight it out. We'll fight it out here or elsewhere. And if at the last the long story is to end, it were better it should end, not through surrender, but only when we are rolling senseless on the ground." he made this very emphatic statement to the British people that, look, it could end. We could all die. But if we're going to end, and if it's going to finish, then it will be with us rolling senseless on the ground. He had conviction. He had belief. And he declared it to the world at a time that nobody believed it. Remember, his own cabinet minister, Neville Chamberlain, said, hey, it's over. Forget it. But he stood up and he said just the opposite at a time where he had no allies to help him, through this. So, you know, he made this very interesting. And when I think about declaring what you want to do, you know, whether it's Pam and Terry, for example, as buddies, and they declare to each other, hey, this is what I'm going to do. It's good to have a buddy or a friend that you can declare something to, because then you're kind of on the line a little bit. And it makes you want to accomplish what you want to accomplish. So, you know, declare it, declare it, declare it, and it makes a difference. And I always think about what I was reading in Winston Churchill's statement when he said to declare it. Okay, and then devote to it. And, you know, when you talk about devotion, I was looking up what the definition of devotion means. And it says it's to give a large or part of one's time or resources to a person, an activity, or a cause. And, you know, we always talk about the limitless family. We always talk about the limitless cause. And so, you know, you're going to devote to do this for a lot of reasons. You're going to devote it for yourself, for what you want to accomplish. You're going to devote it for your family, for their health, for, you know, the financial things that you can provide for them. There's a lot of things, but it's give all or a large or part of one's time to resources, to a person, an activity, or a cause. So you're going to define it, number one, you're going to declare it, number two, and you're going to devote to do it. And that's where we get into our training of the commitment letter and things like that. And we'll be doing this over the next few weeks as well as we talk about it. So I've been watching Malin do a lot of planning for where we're going with Limitless 2.0 and all the hurdles that she has to accomplish to get over. Stuff that I never even dreamed of that, you know, you have to do over and over again. It's easy for me just to say, hey, I'm just going to go out and I'm just going to recruit. I'm going to tell people the Great Limitless story. I'm going to share with them the Great Limitless products. But when I talk about resolve and I talk about somebody who's devoted, it's pretty easy for me to look at Malin and realize what she's trying to accomplish with Limitless. So Malin has a few thoughts that she wants to share. You guys put those cards up, and then we're going to continue to talk about those three things and specifics on how to accomplish them in the future, because we simply just don't have time today. So with that, Malin, I'm just going to turn it over to you.
All right. Well, thank you, Steve. And I love the launch pad that you just gave, because if there's any one thing that I have learned in particular this last year, it is that there is a yin and a yang. There's an opposition in all things, and that can actually be a good thing. It is in the tough times that you grow your muscle and get stronger. You know, when you're going to the gym, you're actually tearing down your muscles when you're lifting weights so that you can then rest and allow them to heal. And so there's some real greatness in putting out the positives and the declaration, the devotion, you know, all those kind of things, defining your goals. Those are so important. But the other thing you have to do is you have to be careful of the diss. What I mean by that, you know, diss, that's the slang, you know, dissing on somebody. But I want to talk about distraction, disappointment, and disbelief. And there are many more disses that you can come up with that can stop you from achieving your goals, or that can rob you from the opportunity to grow if you don't understand how to use those things properly or use them to your advantage. So first of all, I want to talk about distraction. And, you know, one of the things in relating distraction to our business is if you come to the end of the month like we are now, and if there's probably no greater month full of distractions than December. But that's when you know if you're doing the month-end scamper, then you've probably been distracted during the month. And we are in a world where there's so many stimuli. I mean, things that we didn't even have. You know, when I first got into network marketing, I think I had a cell phone, but it was tied to my car. And I had that little antenna that was a piglet antenna coming out of my car. And I actually was a work phone. I was doing sales for a bank. And so I kind of had to do that. And so that was only a minor distraction. I remember later on when I was driving and I thought, what was our life like before cell phones? And I wanted to go back to that life because of the distractions. And I remember I couldn't get cellular service back in the early days. I was driving down the freeway, driving and talking on the phone and all those kind of things. And I remember I threw my cell phone in the back seat thinking, I just want to go back to a simpler time where I didn't lock my door when I left the house, you know, and I had lots of spare time because it was only black and white television. And so we do live in a world of distractions. In fact, just in the time that you've been listening to these two yahoos who love you and have a limitless vision for you and with you, you've probably been met with 1,000 different distractions. You know, your pet needed help, or you were too hot or too cold and you had to put socks on, or, you know, more than likely all of us are too cold, or other humans got in your way, or you had visual distractions. You know, it's kind of like in the little movie Squirrel, you know, where Doug the dog, you know, got distracted. You know, we're puppies all the time, different sounds. You know, we think that we're multitasking. I read an article on multitasking, and it basically said, you know, in most cases, multitasking is just the ability to switch focus back and forth between multiple things. And the reality is, as we think we're multitasking, things fall through the cracks. Unless you're doing things that don't take up two channels, like you're folding laundry and you're listening to a book on tape. Those are two different channels that require your brain, and so those can be multitasking. I always say when I'm in the shower, I get some of my best ideas because I am, you know, that's when I can multitask. My body knows how to shower, then autopilot, and my brain is free to have that creativity come through. So we are met with a lot of distractions. We have business distractions. What are some of the things we get distracted with? Even goal setting can be a distraction, meaning we can spend more time shuffling papers, redoing things. I used to, every single year this time of year, I used to create a calendar, and I liked the creative side of it. So I'd, you know, pull all the things in January, snowmen and snowflakes and all the fun things in January. I did that for every single month, and I would spend all this time, and I would get 3 months in, and I wasn't even using that calendar anymore. But it was a distraction, of avoidance, if you will. Trying to gain knowledge can be a distraction. Learning about all the products versus just taking those products and getting your own story from those products. You know, or maybe a distraction is other leaders, other distributors. What are they doing? You know, and the key operative word is, what are they doing? They're doing versus you just looking and being distracted first. You know, I always love Jim Rohn when he talks about, you know, the numbers game. And he says, you know, maybe you can talk to, you know, 10 people and get all 10 people to give you a yes. And yeah, I have to talk to, you know, 10 people and I only get one person who will say yes. And the reality is I can still outdo you. Because I can go talk to, you know, 110 people and get 11 people to say yes versus you're only talking to 10 and getting 10. So the reality is you can get rid of your distractions. You can avoid them. But I read this great article by Sam Anderson, and it was called In the Sense of Distraction. And the very first section of this article, you know, the reality was he talked about the poverty of attention. Meaning that in today's world, attention has become poor. Our attention we are distracted. We have so many things now that are stimulating us. You know, it's not just that there's one movie a week. There's 100 movies that come out every week. It's not that you have to wait for the next week in a series. You can go on Netflix and binge watch Stranger Things. You can binge watch Grace and Frankie. I mean, we have so much that we can gobble up in our and really can feed us inside of distractions. And he talked about, you know, through the series of attention, the reality is that, you know, almost like the Buddhists, when they are looking at meditation, they actually focus on a distraction. And he used the example of a jackhammer. Right? A jackhammer outside your window. And, you know, if you can think about a jackhammer, you can't think of anything else when there's a jackhammer going on in your background. And so you try and swallow it out, right? You go to a different room, you shut the door, you try and do anything to avoid the jackhammer. But the reality is, go out there and go listen to the jackhammer. Let it clear your head for a moment. And so there is actually a value at this at the expense of distractions, only in the fact that you need to clear the slate and clear your mind. And he, you know, used the example, you know, John Lennon, even, who didn't have, you know, an iPhone at the time. You know, the Beatles didn't have the internet. And look at all the great things that they achieved in a small period of 10 years. And the question is, had they had the things we have today, would they have achieved what they had? Would their creativity time, the time spent in creativity, would they have been able to achieve it, or would it have done more? Well, fast forward to today, the likes of an Elon Musk, you know, or Steve Jobs. I mean, probably the person who has influenced most of us the most have been like a Steve Jobs, who had all of those. So with or without distractions, you can still have success. You know, Steve and I picked up a book called Tribe of Mentors, and it's by a guy named Timothy Ferris. He's written quite a few books. One of the books he wrote was The 4-Hour Workweek, you know, how to life hack anything you're doing in this life to get the most out of the time you spend. And he interviewed, you know, over 100 individuals, and he called this book The Tribe of Mentors. And he asked these mentors 11 questions, things like, what is your favorite book? What, you know, what is the book that you read the most? Or what is the book you give away the most? You know, what has been your greatest failure? You know, all the way up to, what do you do when you're overwhelmed and you lose focus? And I liked one of the mentors he chose. And by the way, these mentors aren't names that I necessarily recognized. And it was so great for me to kind of peruse through this book. I haven't read all 600 pages, but I perused through there of names I didn't recognize and the spectacular accomplishments that they have had. But one person, his name is Soman Chainani, and I probably didn't say that correctly, but he's a New York Times best-selling author. And one of the things he talked about is, when you're feeling overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do? And I loved his response. He says, you know, when I feel overwhelmed, it's usually because I have overcommitted. I have too many things that I'm trying to get done all at once. And so I have to force myself to start saying no. I have to say no to the distractions. And, you know, Steve always teases me, because I'm the person who says yes. In fact, just yesterday he said, I watched you leading up to Christmas, and you exhausted me just watching you, because you met with this many individuals to exchange gifts. You went to this many parties. You wrapped this many presents. You did, and you're dealing with all the things that are going on at Limitless. I mean, it was exhausting. And yet there were things I just didn't want to say no to, but there were things that I had to learn to say no to and be prepared for. So when you're overwhelmed, look and see if you're overcommitted. And then he also talked about focus, and this was my favorite piece about distraction, and then I'll kind of stop here on distraction. But that was this: if you're not focused, there's a good chance that whatever you feel like you need to be focused on, that you're not locked in. What do you mean by that, not locked in? Is that you're not quite sure that the thing you're focusing on is going to bring you success, and so you keep one foot out the door, or you still have the ability to pull the ripcord and escape from the commitment that you've made. But when you're locked in, then you have to focus. And so, guys, if you still think you can pull a ripcord on your commitment to Limitless, then get rid of that ripcord. Get fully dipped, because that is when you can focus. And the other thing he talked about focus is fear. If you fear that you're going to fail, then you can't focus. And he talked about, in writing books, you know, when you're forced to be creative, when you have a book deal, you're forced to be creative. And sometimes the fear of failure can stop that creativity. And he said, I used to give in to those fears, but I realized I had to look at them and just recognize them for what they were. You know, we've heard that saying, false evidence is appearing real. You can't give in to the fears because they will rob you of your focus. And probably the most important thing, referring back to that article, The Poverty of Attention by Sam Anderson, you know, the reality is you just have to do it now. Don't focus on the distraction. Do it now. Do it anyway, in spite of your fears. So if you want to avoid the mess, what do I mean by mess? Month-end scamper. If you don't want to have a month-end scamper, then get out of the mess and avoid those distractions. Get out of the poverty of attention and really focus on what you want to do. All right, next one, disappointment. Disappointment usually comes when your expectations aren't being met. And I love how Steve talked about, you know, writing goals down and making sure that what you wanted to earn, you know, that you know the steps to earn that. Oftentimes, you know, when we talk about our commitment letter and, you know, there's those important five questions that you ask, and one of them is, or two of them are, how much time are you going to commit to your limitless business? Versus, how much do you want to make in your limitless business? That's one of the first signs. Why you want to use the commitment letter when you're signing somebody up? Because if they say, yeah, I want to make $10,000 a month, but they can only devote an hour a week, well, show me any job posted in the newspaper, online, on monster.com. Show me any job that you can commit 1 hour a week and make $10,000 a month. Something is wrong with that. And so most of the time, disappointment comes from not understanding the expectations that you have set and setting yourself on the right path to meet that. So what is your commitment to becoming an executive, an X3, an X5, an X10? What is it you have to do to achieve that? Well, first of all, you have to understand, what is it to become an executive? Guys, if you don't know yet, if you don't understand those few things that are unique to our comp plan, they aren't in any other comp plan. That's why we have 3 patents pending on there. You need to understand. Take the time. Learn it. Why is it that the first 50 that is spent by all customers and all distributors, why does that not go towards your 300 that you need to become an executive? Go learn that. We've put out multiple videos, multiple trainings, multiple narrated PowerPoints. Go learn it. It won't take you much time. Commit to that. Share it with other people, because once you understand how to be executive, you'll know why the average person earns between 8 and 12% in our comp plan and not in other comp plans, because we're an efficient plan. We pay the people doing the work. Whether you're a newlywed or you're nearly dead, whatever level of commitment you put into this comp plan, you will be handsomely rewarded. We don't create accidental leaders here. We don't. We don't have someone who got lucky and got in a special spot. You have to go do the work. And so you need to match that commitment to those. But here's more importantly, it's all about executive. Are you going to be a 350 PSV executive? What's PSV? Go learn what PSV is. It's the volume of all your customers and you for any single month. You know, 1,000 PSV executive. That's the average that we're seeking. And the reason why we know that that can be met is because even during the tough summer months, we had Keisha look at our average, and it was almost 700 PSV, 680 some odd, right? And so for every person who's only doing 350, if the average is almost 700, that means for every person who's just barely doing the minimum of 350, there's another person doing 1,000. So can it be met? Absolutely. We have 2,000 PSV execs, right? We've got Terry Kempford, who's been averaging 2,000 PSV for the last quarter of this year. That can be met. And so make that goal to be 1,000 PSV exec, because if you do an average 1,000 PSV exec, then Steve's model that he gave, if the average, if you can just take an average of 10% of your volume, you want to make $5,000 a month, then you've got to do $50,000 in PSV. Well, if the average person is doing $1,000, that means you only need 50 execs on your team within your payout in order to make that $5,000 a month. That's the kind of things you have to do, that expectations that are being met, so you don't have to have that disappointment. Now, disappointing feelings are real. I want to tell you a personal story about that. You know, being, you know, dating Steve was so much fun. And he's laughing here. He's sitting next to me. He just burst out in laughter because I have to tell you, you date someone, and I used to say it was the 90-day excursion. I kissed a lot of frogs, guys, a lot of frogs. I was married for 7 years, got divorced, and then I was single for 15 years. And about, I don't know, 10 years into that, I started dating Steve. And I had known Steve clear back from my college days. My ex-husband actually worked for Steve. And so, you know, I had that friendship established as it was. But as you date and you kind of start feeling things, and this one Valentine's Day, Steve said, you know, I want you to get really dressed up, and I'm gonna have a limousine come and pick you up. And I thought, oh my gosh, he's really going, you know, getting out there, really doing this. And I thought, oh, he's gonna give me a ring. And so, man, I lost all the weight I could. I got into my best skinny, long black dress. Did my hair up right, spent hours on the makeup. You know, I was singing into my hairbrush, getting ready, because I thought for sure I was getting engaged. And he picks me up, and the limo comes and picks me up, and then it stops by and picks him up. And there, I have no idea where we're going. We get on the freeway, we drive, and we end up going to the canyon, where I know it's, like, at the time, the only 5-star restaurant in all of Salt Lake City, Lakaya Quail Run. And I grew up, I mean, this was, you know, in my backyard growing up. You know, you died to go there for senior prom, you know, and the guy spent all of his summer savings to take you on senior prom to Lakaya Quail Run. And we go there on Valentine's Day, and of course, never go to a restaurant on Valentine's Day because it's like moo cow. They're just processing you. It's limited menu, all that. But I didn't care because I knew I was getting a diamond ring at the end of the night. And we, you know, we got done with this fabulous dinner, and I kept looking for the ring in my dessert or looking for the ring in my glass. And we get back in the limo, and I'm thinking, oh, it's hidden in the side pocket of the limousine. And we go all the way home, and he drops me off and thanks me for a great night, and I got no ring. Okay, do you want to know the disappointment? He's laughing here. He had no idea that I set an expectation in my brain that he was going to ask me to marry him that night. And what started off as an amazing night turned out to be a huge disappointment for me. Now, he didn't know this. Did I tell him this? Absolutely not. Not until after we were married. Because here's what happened on the real story of when we did get engaged. You know, we'd been dating for quite a long period of time. And the reality was both of us were getting to that point almost at the same time that we wanted to get married. However, sneaky Steve was not going to give me a hint of notion that, you know, he wanted me to marry him. And so I'd start dropping these little hints about getting married. And he was like, I don't think I'm ever going to get married again, you know. And all the while, he's taking his kids to go help pick out the ring. He's dressed up in a suit and tie and asked my parents for my hand in marriage. He's even asked my brother for my hand in marriage because he didn't want my brother to beat the crap out of him. And you know, by the time it came for him to now take me on a trip to Paris, where he planned on proposing at the top of the Eiffel Tower, I was done. I mean, my feelings were, this guy, you know, I, as much as I loved him, and I wasn't going to give him an ultimatum because I know what ultimatums did for him. And so I just had determined in the back of my brain, this was going to be the last time I was going to go anywhere with him. I was going to enjoy the trip for the last time, and I was done. And so my expectations was this was the go-away trip, right? Well, it's on his birthday. We land in Paris. It's on his birthday. I have a special surprise for him back in the room for a birthday present. But we decide we're going to go to the top of the Eiffel Tower. Well, he's yanking me by hand. I mean, I feel like a little girl in elementary school, and her big brother's yanking her around. I mean, I'm trying to enjoy the view, and he's yanking me around, and he gets me to a spot on the Eiffel Tower, and he hands me this hanky from my mom, who's like, you know, I'm thinking this is because she's never traveled, and so it's a piece of her with her. And the reality is he gets down on his knee and he proposes. I had no expectation of being proposed to. I will always have Paris. I will always have that surprise because of that, you know, I didn't have the expectation. And so you have to match those expectations. If you want the good surprise, then don't go in there with an expectation. You know, go in there, you know, with the intention that, you know, if you're going to build your limitless business, then go in there and, you know, because those feelings of disappointment and the feeling, you know, the day that I thought I was getting engaged and I didn't, and the day I thought I was ending a relationship and I got engaged. And let me tell you something, you know, you see all these pretty engagements on TV or in the movies, you know, and he gets on his knee and he engages and he pulls the ring out of the box and he slips it on her finger. Not me, man. Second he engaged, I got that ring out of that box. I put that ring on my finger again, all by myself, just in case he was going to change his mind. So, you know, you want to decide, you know, you need to decide what those expectations are, and then you have to let go, and you have to let go of disappointments. Disappointments are going to come. Things are not going to be as expected. You're going to ask people to do things, and they're not going to do them. You're going to want this more for other people than you want it for themselves. Don't let disappointments get in the way of your devotion and your commitment to doing this business. Do it now and do it anyway. Okay, one last thing. I know we've gone over, but one last thing is the disbelief. You know, disbelief can rob you of the things you want. Last Monday, we talked about, in our Christmas message, we talked about kindness is a muscle. And guys, let me tell you something. Belief is a muscle. It's easy to believe when you're just looking forward to and creating your vision of you want this, what you want this next year to be. It's easy to have belief today. It's easy because it's a brand new start. But when it becomes hard and when you have to exercise your belief muscle is when something becomes difficult. Something you didn't expect hits you. You know, your first week in on a new diet and you cheat on your diet. Or your first week that, you know, the second weekend and you're going to go to the gym every day and you can't go to the gym. Or the time when you really want to go build something and ask somebody to do something and don't. Or you disappoint yourself because you just can't muster up talking to all those people who are parading in front of you about the limitless opportunity because you're afraid or you're embarrassed or whatever it might be. That's when you build your belief muscles. It takes focus to have belief, so you can't have distractions. It takes acceptance and satisfaction, not disappointment. And during those disappointments is when you will exercise those belief muscles. And I've never had more opportunities to exercise my muscles of belief than this past year as we are preparing for Limitless 2.0. And I will tell you, I am grateful for those difficult times. I am grateful for those moments where you feel alone. I am grateful for those times when people make you feel like it can't be done or they're telling you that you can't get it done. You know, and visualization, guys, is just a thing. I've used this quote from Daniel Pena before because it really sums it up. It's out of a book that's now out of print called Your First 100 Million. And he basically is saying, visualization, go learn about it because it's worked for centuries. It has worked for centuries. Why would it not work for you now? You have, you know, a lot of people, they want to have something. So they think if they want to have something, then they got to do something and then they will be happy. The reality is you have to be that thing first, because if you be that thing that you want, then you will do what it is you have to do in order to get what you want to have. And that's ultimately why Simon Sinek says you have to start with the why. You have to start with the why. You have to spend time with your why and get that belief. And we will do a lot of trainings over the year on these things, you know, the distractions, the disappointment, and the disbelief. Don't let those three things get in way of, you know, describing what you want and being devoted to what you're going to have. Now, I'm going to end because I loved the story that Steve talked about from Winston Churchill. So I'm going to end with a quote from Winston Churchill that really sums it up when it talks about belief. And that is, before you can inspire with emotion, you must be swamped with it yourself. Before you can move their tears, your own must flow. To convince them, you must yourself believe. I'm going to say that one more time. Before you can inspire with emotion, you must be swamped with it yourself. before you can move their tears, your own must flow. To convince them, you must yourself believe. You know, as Steve and I prepared for this training this morning, we said to ourselves, we're almost preaching to the choir, because the people who are on this call today are the people who have the belief. You have been the soldiers at Dunkirk. You have been with us through thick and thin, and you are committed to be with us all through next year and through more thick and thin, so that we can end with that ultimate limitless surprise. And we want to thank each and every one of you. We love each and every one of you. We lock arms with you. We're not above you. We're below you. We are here to serve you. And we appreciate all that you do in male helping limitless move forward. With that, Steve, I'll turn it back to you.
All right. Wow. Wow. Well, that's good. And that's, you know, I love the visualization. I pictured all that. Guys, we love you, as you get from the land. You know, it goes without saying. Thanks very much for being on this call. We hope you had a great Christmas. And more importantly, we hope that 2018 will be even better. And so with that, Alan, let's just take it off mute and hear where everyone's calling in.
All right.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy
wow.
New
thank
Year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy
Wonderful
New Year.
Call. Thank you.
Fantastic
Happy
call.
Job.
Happy New Year, guys.
From Seattle. Thanks so much.